Now, with the latest from the world of technology, this is the Tech Guide Podcast with Stephen Fenwick.
Lots to talk about.
Tech Guide.
It's a very well-rounded product, combines great design, great technology, lots of excellent features.
Tech Guide.
This is why Samsung has seen a huge surge, why their profits are up.
Keeping you updated and educated, this is the Tech Guide Podcast.
This is not an ultrabook. If you're looking for something small, slim and lightweight, then you need to look elsewhere.
Tech Guide.
Probably one of the most impressive little devices I've seen in quite a while.
Now, from the studios of techguide.com.au, Stephen Fenwick.
Hello and welcome to Tech Guide episode 94, the podcast that keeps you updated and educated about the latest consumer technology. Thanks for listening and thanks for downloading. My name is Stephen Fenwick. I'm the editor of techguide.com.au. On this week's show, we're going to talk about the iPhone 6 and what it might look like, the hacker who hijacked a baby video monitor, and the lengths Apple is going to remain environmentally responsible. In the Tech Guide reviews, we'll run our eye over the Bridge keyboard that turns your iPad into a mini laptop, the new Toshiba range of laptops, and Samsung's new NX30 digital camera. And we'll wrap things up with a Tech Guide help desk. And it's all brought to you by Netgear, Australia's number one brand of home Wi-Fi products. A packed show, so let's jump right in. Okay, well, it's only a few months before we see Apple's new iPhone. Already the rumors are building on the internet, and we're expecting a September release, if it's anything to go by, from a year since the iPhone 5S and iPhone 5C were launched. And there are plenty of rumors and plenty of specs that are floating about the internet. There are even companies that are producing cases for what they believe is going to be the iPhone, which the rumors are trending towards having a larger screen, a 4.7-inch screen. There's also a rumor that they're producing a separate 5.5-inch iPhone model. But if the rumors are to be believed, the 5.5-inch may not make 2014. It's looking like a 2015 product. But the iPhone 6 is still, with the 4.7-inch screen, is still pretty prominent in rumor circles, and so much so that a French website has actually gone to the lengths of rendering, based on the specs that have been created for case manufacturers, or leaked to case manufacturers, I should say, and the rumors that are doing the rounds. This French site called nowhereelse.fr has actually visualized these designs and created some renderings, which I've actually written about on Tech Guide, if you want to take a look at them on my website. But it does show quite a radically changed design. Now, Apple tend to stick to an iPhone design for a couple of years. They did that with the iPhone 3. They had the 3G, the 3GS. Then they went over to the iPhone 4 and 4S. Then they created a larger screen with the iPhone 5 and subsequently the 5S. There is the 5C, of course, as well in that last mix. But if the company is due then to produce a different design for the iPhone 6, if in fact it is even called the iPhone 6. Now, I mentioned a 4.7-inch screen, but other specs are pointing towards a thinner phone as well. They're saying it will be just 6 millimeters thick, 6.7 centimeters wide, and 13.8 centimeters long. But apart from those raw specs, I think it's fascinating to see the concepts based on the cases, the case designs, or the case specs that people have been basing their case designs on. And what we're looking at here is a rounded product. So the iPhone 5 and even the 4 had quite straight edges all around, and it was flat on the top, flat on the bottom. What we're looking at here with the iPhone 6, if, again, these rumors and specs are to be believed, is a more curved product. We're seeing there are no straight edges on this. There's lots of curves, and the screen on these renderings actually go all the way to the edge and, in fact, curl around the edge, around to the edge. The corners are rounded as well. The top and bottom are not flat like we see with the 5 and the 5S, but more rounded, and it's still retaining It's white parts of the home screen, of the front panel, I should say, above and below the screen. And there is still, of course, that home button underneath the main screen. But there are touches of color. Apple did introduce a gold iPhone last year, and we're seeing that in these designs as well. The gold color, there'll be obviously a silver, there'll be a black, but the renderings that we've featured on Tech Guide are of the gold iPhone. Now, as I said, these are based on rumors. These are not official pictures, but one thing that I'm actually looking forward to, if the rumors are true, and I believe in this aspect they are, the screen size will be larger, 4.7-inch screen, which is almost in line with other major products, other smartphones in the market, like the HTC One M8 has a 5-inch screen, the Galaxy S5 has a 5.1-inch screen, so it's still a couple of three or 0.4 of an inch behind those models, but it's now playing in the same ballpark, which is, I think, going to be great news for customers who have been attracted, I think, by the larger smartphones. There's been a movement, some people moving away from iPhone, wanting that larger screen, but this is really going to answer or satisfy those people who are considering a move to a larger device, whereas the iPhone itself is going to have a bigger screen as well. The iPhone 6, if you want to check out those designs, so they'll feature them at techguide.com.au. There's also a link, of course, to the original site where they were featured, but only time will tell if these rumors are actually true. So this is what we think the iPhone 6 will look like. We're going to have to wait till September to see if we're right.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Fenwick.
Interesting story coming out of the US this week. And we've heard of hackers. Hackers are what they try to do is get into your network, get into your computer, try to find out some information about you. But there was a hack with a difference in Cincinnati, Ohio. A hacker has managed to hijack a baby video monitor and obviously see through the camera and see whatever the camera's seeing. And it was even able to scream at the baby. The terrified parents heard the sounds coming from their daughter's nursery, heard the sounds of someone screaming, wake up to their child. And of course, that would terrify any parent who bolted into the room only to find the room empty. But when confronted with the camera, they noticed that the camera actually turned to face them. And then they were the subject of a barrage of obscenities from this hacker who had got through the system. A truly frightening intrusion, no doubt there, and one I think that we can learn from. In this case, the parents were using a product by a company called Foscam. This was a brand of baby video monitor, and it was a device where users could have a monitor, but also use their smartphones to remotely monitor. So there's an app that allows them to view whatever the camera is viewing and even turn the camera to change the view, to have a closer look, to pan around the room. Now, what's happened here, the hackers obviously gotten through a vulnerability that was known to exist within this product, this Foscam baby video monitor. So this person was able to exploit that vulnerability and actually see through that camera, see this child, talk to this child, scream at the child, terrorize the parents, and also scream at the parents as well. So a frightening intrusion. The parents obviously relieved that there was no one in the room, although at first they did think there was someone in the room with their child. So terrifying experience for those. But it does highlight the fact that we do really need to take care and safeguard our connections and treat devices like this baby video monitor as we would any other connected device. Our computers, we're trained or taught to have some kind of security, have a security on our networks as well. And this should also apply to any other connected device. You should secure them with a very strong password. Now, in the case of this incident with this couple, their surname's Schreck. It's Heather and Adam Schreck from Cincinnati, Ohio. What occurred here was that there was a firmware update for their camera patching up a vulnerability as was discovered by this hacker. This hacker obviously knew about a vulnerability and was counting on people who had not upgraded the firmware that patched up that vulnerability. So here's a case where not keeping up with the device's firmware updates has allowed someone to intrude into their system. So that's one thing, apart from obviously having strong passwords, so separate password, different to the network password, and being up to date with the latest firmware updates for a product, especially a connected product like this, important to stay on top of it. If they had have done that, the Shreks would have avoided this incident, but instead they weren't aware of this update, and therefore the vulnerability still existed. And this person, this hacker, we don't know who he is, but he's exploited that vulnerability. But as I said, it does really highlight the fact that we really need to be vigilant online. Whatever's online, whether it's our phones, our computers, our baby video monitors, we really have to take care. And unfortunately, there are some people who don't really have an attitude towards having a strong password. There are some people who alarmingly leave default passwords on some products. Like when you get a modem, for example, I think the default password is admin, or the username's admin, the default password's password. And there are some people who don't change it. And then they wonder why these things happen. Now, in the case of the Shreks, I think it was a case of them not being aware of the update that was available for their camera. And hence that's why it happened. But I think we need to take all precautions, have strong passwords on all devices, different password for your home network, and home networks with a modem router normally create a firewall on your home connection so you can stay safe. But in this case, it was a firmware update that was missed. So if you do own this sort of product, I think it's best to be better safe than sorry and take that extra time to create that strong password, check if there are any firmware updates. You don't want this to happen to you. I think an example for us all there. You want to read that full story? It's at techguide.com.au. Well, Apple came out last week, just in time for Earth Day, to outline a few things. First of all, they created a new video which allowed the users to be informed about their environmental responsibilities. Now, there's a video that was actually narrated by Tim Cook called Better, and this actually takes people through Apple's environmental responsibility plans and just how far the lengths they're going to make sure that they have less of an impact on the environment for all of their data centers, their stores, their corporate headquarters and things like that. So to begin with, though, Apple did kick off Earth Day by actually changing their store logo. So the little leaf above the Apple itself, they changed that from being obviously white. They made that green for Earth Day around the world. So all the iconic Apple stores around the world, including a couple here in Australia, the one in George Street in Sydney and the Bondi store, their logos were changed. But apart from that, what impressed me was the fact that how far they'd gone to reduce their reliance on fossil fuels and other polluting energy. The amount of renewable energy used by the company is remarkable. It's astonishing how far the company's gone. I'll give you an example. The Apple have very vast data centers. Now, these data centers run things like Siri. You know, whenever you make an inquiry to Siri, it actually sends up a message to the internet to retrieve back the information. iMessage is using data to send around your messages, maps, and massive things like the iTunes Store and the App Store. iTunes obviously got tens of millions of tunes of tracks on board. App Store has got more than a million apps in there as well. So bottom line is that every time any of these services are called upon by customers on their iPhones, iPads, whatever the device happen to be using, this action, so every time an app's downloaded, a song, an iBook, message, Siri is used, the iTunes Store, apps or whatever, this is powered by nature. So these data centers are actually powered by 100% renewable energy, like solar power, things like that. So that is truly incredible that these data centers are not even on the grid. They're all self-powered, all powered by renewable energy. But it doesn't stop at the data centers. 94% of the global corporate facilities of Apple is also run by renewable energy. And that's up from 35% in 2010. So in 4 years, they've leaped up to 94% of the company. On the store side, just in Australia alone, 21 of Apple's Australian stores are also 100% powered by renewable energy. And I think that it really, you got to take your hat off to them, a company of their size, and going to this kind of, going to reaching this kind of level of reliance on renewable energy across the company. I'd love to see where other companies, similar size companies, like I'd love to know where Samsung is in comparison to this. That's obviously Apple's really very fierce rival there in the electronic space, but I wouldn't mind seeing what LG, Sony, Panasonic, all these other big electronics manufacturers are up to. It doesn't stop there. Of course, they manufacture their products safely, so no longer are they using harmful substances like lead or arsenic or mercury in the products. And of course, these can all be easily recycled. In Apple, in the last 20 years, has actually diverted nearly 200,000 tons of electrical equipment from landfill. And of course, their efforts there will continue. But they did run several full-page ads worldwide in the press. And this was obviously not only getting the message out that they've changed the website and just letting people know how far they've come in terms of their environmental responsibility, but it was a cheeky poke at Samsung was the headline. Now, as we know, Samsung and Apple have been involved in a number of lawsuits over alleged copyright infringements, design infringements, things like that. And the headline on Apple's environment ads said, "There are some ideas we want every company to copy." So cheeky backhander to Samsung and other companies for that matter, that look, if you want to copy something of ours, here's something you can copy, their environmental responsibility. I thought that was pretty cool. And it's kind of made the whole environmental message, it wasn't a political statement. This is Apple saying, right, this is what we're doing. This is what how we're showing responsibility. What are you guys doing? I think it's for too long the sort of the environmental story. The argument has been a political one where you know you either believe in it or not. Whereas Apple just thought, you know what, we're just going to get on with it. We're going to be responsible about our electricity use and our reliance on renewable energy, which is you got to really admire that. And they've just gone ahead and done it. No arguing about it. No, this is the first time after years of development and in trying to improve their environmental responsibility that they've actually come out and let the people know just how far they've come. I think that's pretty cool, and I'm sure there are a lot of people that think the same. You can read that story at techguide.com.au.
Keeping you updated and educated. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finney.
Tech Guide.
The Tech Guide podcast is proudly sponsored by Netgear, Australia's number one Wi-Fi brand, and they've just released their brand new Wi-Fi range extenders. Now, these products, after much study, Netgear has found that many of the customers were actually not using the range extenders in the right way. They've actually conducted experiments and asked some of the customers how they were using them, found, surprisingly, that a lot of them were using them incorrectly and actually placing them in the wrong spot of the house. As a result, they've given the device a bit of a makeover. There are now indicator lights that allow users to actually be directed towards the best part of the house for the range extender to sit. And if you do that, you can give your Wi-Fi a boost. Netgear's new AC750 Wi-Fi range extender EX6100 is here. Using this product, you can optimize your existing Wi-Fi network and extend it to hard-to-reach places throughout your home. The EX6100 delivers fast Wi-Fi speed and connectivity for smartphones, tablets, laptops, and more, allowing users to enjoy their favorite entertainment throughout the home. In a convenient wall plug design, the extender has two Wi-Fi modes, so you can use it as an extender to boost your existing Wi-Fi mode, or flick it to access point mode to create a new Wi-Fi spot. The EX6100 AC750 Wi-Fi range extender from Netgear is available now. Check it out if you need to extend your Wi-Fi range to use the internet in parts of your home where the weak signal is a little weak. If you want to check out more about that product, you can do so at netgear.com.au.
Tech Guide.
Now, a Tech Guide review with Stephen Fenwick.
Tech Guide. Okay, we're going to kick off our reviews this week with a product that was actually pitched to me from a company that got its start on Kickstarter. Now, that's a popular website that allows companies with prototype products to gain the support they need and the money they need to go into full production. Now, the Bridge keyboard is one such product, and it's Bridge spelt with a Y, B-R-Y-D-G-E. Now, this is a company that was founded in Silicon Valley and subsequently bought out by a group of Australian investors, and they intend to not only bring the Bridge keyboard to market and its subsequent other versions, but they're also thinking of producing a range of lifestyle accessories. But anyway, the Bridge keyboard is a very high quality device. It allows you to turn your iPad 2, iPad 3rd or 4th generation into a laptop. The device itself has a keyboard. It's made out of one piece of anodized aluminium, so it looks very much like an Apple computer, like an Apple laptop. It's got a full six-row QWERTY keyboard and two very solid hinges that allows users to slide the iPad inside, and it will then grip the iPad. You know, there's silicon inside, so you're not going to scratch the iPad, of course, but there's enough friction inside that hinge to hold the iPad in place with enough strength that you can actually pick up the thing by the corner of the iPad. It will still, the keyboard will not fall off it. That's just how strong it can make that connection. The keyboard obviously connects to the iPad using Bluetooth. And then, so once that's connected and you're up and running, you've got a little laptop. Your iPad screen is obviously turned on its side. That 9.7-inch screen fits really nicely within the product, and even in the closed position, it does form a nice look. It looks like a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro, and it can easily be opened up, and it goes to sleep when you shut it and opens up. It wakens, and then you just need to type in your password. But it does allow these users who are fans of their iPad, they use the iPad casually just using the touchscreen, but when it comes time to type out a document or do some work or edit a document, they prefer to have a keyboard under their fingers. And I'm one of these users who loves a keyboard, and the review that I wrote about the Bridge keyboard on Tech Guide, I actually wrote on the Bridge keyboard. I thought, well, what better way to test it than to write about it using that product? And I found the typing was really easy. I'm used to typing on a larger keyboard on my MacBook Pro with Retina, the 15-inch Retina display that I have, but it did take a little while to get used to that slightly smaller keyboard, but once I got used to where the keys were, I was able to type along pretty quickly. Instant responsiveness, whatever you typed appeared on the screen straight away. The only odd thing that happened, though, the occasional double letter, you might hit the E and there's two E's come out instead of the one. Not a deal breaker, but something that you needed to correct every now and again. There's also a speaker on board the Bridge keyboard, so you can sync the sound as well as the keyboard. The speaker quality, probably not as good as the actual speakers on the iPad, but the thing about the iPad is that the speakers are on the back, and what this does, it positions that speaker right in front of the screen, so if you're using the Bridge keyboard to position the iPad to watch a movie, for example, you get the sound coming right from the front of the screen rather than from the back. Might sound a little bit better in the open there, but this is a high quality product. You can feel the quality when you're using it. It's slightly more expensive than your regular case plus keyboard. There's a lot of those on the market. There's also individual keyboards that you can actually just click your iPad in. It might magnetically attach it as well. But the thing with those other devices, the cases and these standalone keyboards, is that you're limited to the angle with which your iPad can be positioned. What I liked about the Bridge keyboard was that you can swing the iPad through all range, 180-degree range, from closed to all the way open, 180 degrees. You could actually stop it at whatever angle you preferred. So with the cases, you're stuck at a certain preset angles that the iPad can sit. Not the case with the Bridge keyboard. I said it was nice to type on. There's a rechargeable battery, so it goes for hours. You can recharge it through the micro USB port on the side. So if you've got an iPad, this is a pretty high quality companion for it. It does cost $150 US for the aluminium version with speakers. There's a $140 version without speakers. They also have a black polycarbonate version with speakers as well. It's only $100. They're all in US dollars. Those those amounts. So, and I've put the address bridgekeyboards.com, and there's a link on Tech Guide. But if you want to check out my review and see some of the pictures I took of the product and what I thought about it in full, you can read my review at techguide.com.au. Okay, we've gone from turning an iPad into a mini laptop to talking about a full-blown laptop. And this is Toshiba's new laptops, which have just been introduced. There are 32 new models in the lineup. So in other words, there's something for everyone, whether you're a student, a creative professional, a family member, whatever you're doing, there is a model to suit you. But what I thought we'd concentrate on here are the two flagship notebooks of the Toshiba range, and that's the Satellite P50T and the Satellite S50. Now, there are some world-first features on these new products. The P50T, which starts at $1,699, that has a 15.6-inch screen, but it's Ultra HD resolution, the world's first laptop to include a 4K screen. So it's got four times the resolution of a regular full HD screen. Now, why would you want to use this? Well, you think about it. If you're a photographer, you shoot video, you're a graphic designer, then you can review your work in a whole new level of detail. There's many photos photographers take. I think an 8-megapixel photo is actually 4K resolution. So imagine the kind of detail you can go into if you need to do your editing. Videographers are now shooting in 4K, same deal. Graphic designers want to have a closer look at what they're doing, then the Toshiba Satellite P50T allows them to do that. The screen is actually being Technicolor certified, so you know you're getting absolute color accuracy with whatever you're doing on the screen. It's got an Intel quad-core i7 processor. It's also got DTS audio through the Harman Kardon built-in speakers. So it's a pretty good laptop, this one. The other in the range, the S50, this is a 15.6-inch screen as well. It's just 19.9 mil thick, which is, and this has got a DVD drive on board. So for that thickness with a DVD, an optical drive on board, that's not too bad at all. Weighs in at 2.23 kilos, and that's that added weight is because you've got that optical drive on board. But it does have a raised keys, LED backlighting on your keyboard. It's also got Harman Kardon speakers. So this is a pretty sturdy workhorse type of computer, a laptop. Toshiba always make decent laptops. They're one of the market leaders in the PC laptop market. Of course, running Windows 8.1, both of these laptops are. The S50 starts at $1,399. And as I said, there are another 30 products in the range, starting at some well under $1,000 and all the way through to the P50T, I should say, which is at its top spec is $2,500. If you want to check these out, if you're in the market for a laptop, it's worth your time to check out the story at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. This is Tech Guide with Stephen Finnick.
Samsung held a media launch last week in Hobart. I couldn't attend, but my good friend Chris Oaten, a former colleague of News Limited and now a professional photographer, went down to cover it on my behalf, and he actually filed a report that appears on Tech Guide. The NX30, this is a new DSLM camera. And this is, it's slightly smaller, obviously, than a DSLR camera, and starts at $1,099. And has obviously the interchangeable lens system. It's got a swing-out screen, 20.3 megapixel resolution. Chris was very impressed with it. That back display actually is an AMOLED display, so you can really frame out your images quite easily. It actually tilts and swivels out from the body to help you line up those difficult shots, difficult angles. It's also got an electronic viewfinder that can actually swivel out from the body and allow the photographer to position it to their comfort. So there is plenty of lenses that are now coming into the system, the DSLM system. Samsung had a success last year with the NX300, I think it was called. This is the latest model that was released and produces the sort of pictures you come to expect from a DSLR. The advantage of this DSLM, it's a lot smaller, the body. So rather than you having to lug around a larger DSLR camera, the DSLM is a lot smaller and compacter and lighter. It's also got Wi-Fi on board too, so you can link it to smartphones and share images straight away right off the camera. But look, this is a camera that's just been released. It's in stores this month, and we're going to have a full review on Tech Guide. But if you want to have an initial look at the features, and that story written by my mate Chris Oaten, you can do that at techguide.com.au.
Tech Guide. Now, answering all your tech questions, the Tech Guide Help Desk.
Interesting question at the forum page on Tech Guide. That's the page where readers and listeners can head over to Tech Guide and ask their question if they need an opinion, might be having a problem with a product, maybe looking for a product. The forum is the place to go. Well, one of our readers is actually looking. He asked a question about trying to find a Tremor FX cinema seat. Now, for those who don't know what that is, there is a seat you can buy that can take feedback from the film and vibrate in time with whatever's on the screen. So if you're going over a bumpy road, the seat will act like it's going over a bumpy road as well. That's just an example. If there is an earthquake, you'll actually not only hear it, but you'll feel it through the seat. This type of feedback or this code I've come to know as D-Box. D-Box is a code that's actually, take a look if you've got a lot of action Blu-ray films or sci-fi films on Blu-ray disc, take a look at the back of the box and you'll be surprised to find that a lot of them have a D-Box soundtrack. So there is a code, a motion code, they call it, that once you're playing it, if you do have a D-Box cinema seat system or the Tremor FX similar system, the system, if it's connected correctly, of course, to your home theater, the D-Box code, the motion code, will play out to the seat and give you that motion feedback. There's a lot of cinema owners that are talking up this kind of effect as being the next wave of cinema. We've had surround sound, 3D, this new motion control, this motion code on your seats where you not only hear the action but feel the action through vibration in your seat. It could be the new wave to hit certain cinema chains in the near future. D-Box has been around for a few years now already in home theaters, and as I said, it is featured. Look on the back of your Blu-ray movies, you'll find there is a motion code for D-Box. This is obviously a high-end product, so it's not something you get that's going to cost a couple of $100. This is installed in a professional home theater system. And, if you're spending that much money, you might as well spend that little bit extra and have the D-Box working as well. So I hope that answers that question for our reader on the Tech Guide forum. If you want to not only hear your films but also feel them, then D-Box is the system for you. And that's the end of our show for another week. Everything we've talked about on the show, by the way, can be seen at techguide.com.au, especially if you want to see those iPhone 6 pictures. Everything we've spoken about, you can check out at techguide.com.au. Special thanks to our sponsors, Netgear, the brand you can trust for all your Wi-Fi needs. If you want to stay connected, the answer is Netgear. Thanks for listening. It's been terrific having your company once again, and we look forward to having your company again next week. So until then, stay safe and stay connected.